Finance and Revenue is open. We're going to go in reverse order today, and I will open up a work session on Senate Bill 543. We've held a hearing or two on this. It's not a new issue to us, and I think we're ready to vote it out unless someone has some questions of staff. And Senator Riley, would you like to make an opening comment on this?
Sure. This is a bill that is for children and for the families who need these services for their children. We want to make sure that kids' out-of-school time is productive and fun. And we want to make sure that kids whose parents cannot afford the current very good programs will be able to participate in programs.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Senator Taylor? Senator Benz? Here. Brian?
This is just an opportunity for citizens to organize. If they don't want to organize, they don't have to organize.
That's right. Okay. All right, well.
We were in a work session, Senator Benz, and we don't have any amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 543 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Benz moves
Senate Bill 543 to the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion? Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Boquist?
Yes, sir.
Senator Riley?
Aye.
Senator Taylor?
Aye.
Vice Chair Benz?
Aye.
Chair House?
House votes aye. The measure passes. Senate Bill 543 goes to the floor of the Oregon State Senate with a due pass recommendation. And Senator Riley will be the carrier.
Let me switch places.
This Senator Riley right here. Okay.
We'll close the work session. And
not just Senator Riley.
Open a hearing on Senate Bill 207, also known as Joyce and Finnegan. And we've had this fairly technical discussion a number of times.
We're going to have it again.
And we're going to continue that discussion until we get it right. let's start off with a briefing here.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'm just.
All right, Chair Haas, members of the committee, Senate Bill 207, as you mentioned, is a Joyce Finnegan bill. I prepared some brief, simple, one brief simple example to go through just as a refresher, with the initial disclaimer that I've tried to make this as simple as possible. And so I can happily provide more detailed information later, but trying to ease this very technical topic. So this diagram shows a unitary group of businesses, two corporations, Corporation A and Corporation B. On this hypothetical example, federal taxable income is $20 million, total U.S. sales are $65 million. If we look at Corporation A, they sell office supplies. They're located in some state that is not Oregon, but are still located within the United States. They have $50 million in U.S. sales and $10 million in Oregon sales. All of these sales are tangible personal property. Corporation B sells arts and crafts supplies. They are located in Oregon. Their U.S. sales are $15 million. And they have $5 million in Oregon sales. And so the total U.S. sales of $65 million is the sum of the $50 million in U.S. sales from Corp A and the $15 million in U.S. sales from Corp B. So quickly, I want to talk about some relevant formulas that you're all, I'm sure, very familiar with after so many sessions hearing this bill. The first is the single sales factor apportionment. So our apportionment factor is the ratio of Oregon sales to U.S. sales. And I'll be using that later in the presentation. And then to calculate Oregon taxable income, we take that apportionment factor and multiply it by federal taxable income. And that gives us the taxable income for the state. So same diagram as before, under the Joyce method. So the Joyce method of apportionment says when we have a unitary group, we will look entity by entity to decide if we can tax these corporations. If we look at Corporation A, on the left-hand side, Corporation A is not taxable in Oregon because they are exempt under Public Law 86272 because they are selling tangible personal property into the state but have no physical presence in Oregon. Corporation B, however, has $5 million in sales that occurred in Oregon. So under the Joyce method, that's the breakdown between the two corporations. To calculate the apportionment factor using that percentage formula I presented earlier. We take the Oregon sales of 5 million divided by the total U.S. sales of 65 million. That gets us to an apportionment percentage of 7.69%. When we get to Oregon taxable income calculation, we take federal taxable income of 20 million, multiply it by that apportionment percentage, and that gives us Oregon taxable income. This is all under the Joyce method. So, same example. Under
Which, by the way, we are.
Yes, currently we are a Joyce state. And so Senate Bill 207 proposes switching us to a Finnegan state. So Finnegan, this is the next example I'll go through. So same two corporations as previous, but now we're talking about the Finnegan method. Now Corporation A has $10 million in sales in Oregon. So the Finnegan method says, when we look at a unitary group of corporations, in this case, unitary group AB, if one of the corporations is taxable in Oregon, then all of the corporations are taxable in Oregon. So because B is taxable in Oregon, both A and B are considered eligible under the Finnegan method. So now A, we count the $10 million in Oregon sales. B, we still have the $5 million in Oregon sales that we saw before. So when we calculate our apportionment percentage, now we have a higher percentage than before because the numerator has gotten larger in this one example. And so then our taxable income calculation in Oregon, we're taking the same $20 million, multiplying it by a higher percentage, so we have a higher number than before. Now, the disclaimer I said at the beginning, I want to reemphasize again. I've made an effort to kind of make this as simple as possible. This will not always be a revenue gain, even though this example was a revenue gain. And there are more technical kind of layers of this that you've probably heard in the past. So I can provide more detailed information if needed. But for now, I just want to reemphasize this is one example that's been simplified. And that's all I've got.
Let's get you to back up and go through it slower. Kind of describe Joyce, not so much by this Corp B and A, but the policy rationale for one or the other.
Okay. Thank you, Isaac. So the idea behind the Joyce method is that when we have a group of interrelated companies, we should evaluate, or the policy argument would be, you would evaluate each corporation individually to determine whether or not Oregon can tax that corporation. Under the Finnegan method, I believe the idea is that by filing as a unitary group, these corporations are interrelated. And so if one of them, if we're able to tax one of them, then all of them are eligible.
So,
Senator Riley.
So how do we, this is an easy example. They both sell office supplies. Although really the other one doesn't sell office supplies, they sell some other supplies. How are they related? Why are they a unitary group?
So Chair Haas, Senator Riley, a unitary group of businesses has to be, and there's a formal definition that I believe Department of Revenue has, but they have to be economically intertwined. And so when I was trying to come up with this example, the idea would be that, so a company selling office supplies, think of things like paper, pen, folders. A company selling arts and crafts supplies would make similar things, but not the same. And so a lot of their materials or kind of economic decision-making could be intertwined. In previous material that I think I had, from before I was here that I saw Chris present, he gave an example of a furniture manufacturer and a cabinet manufacturer, so things using similar inputs.
So I went into an office supply store, and they had some drawing pads. So that makes them the same group as the art supply store.
If they're filing a combined federal return. So these are companies that have similar ownership structure, I believe, and are filing their federal income taxable return together.
Together. Mm-hmm. So you just said something that you hadn't said in that last one, and you said they're filing together. So they're a part of a holding company.
Chair Haas. Senator Riley. So they would be, in this sense, they'd be part of a unitary group. So by choosing to file together, my understanding is that they're self-identifying as a unitary group.
Senator Taylor?
For clarification, I don't know if you know this off the top of your head. Tell us the makeup of the nation, though. How many are which, and et cetera, please.
Yes, Chair Haas, members of the committee. So only states that allow this type of combined reporting that we discussed earlier would be separated into either Joyce or Finnegan. So first distinction is that not all states allow Joyce or Finnegan. That's a separate policy option. The distribution within Joyce and Finnegan would be about 65% of the states that allow combined reporting are Joyce, 35% are Finnegan. And I've got a list here if there's a specific state in mind.
A follow-up?
Follow-up.
How many allow there to be a Joyce or Finnegan?
So I believe it's about 30. Yeah, that's the top of my head.
So about half the states allow to even engage in this. And then of the half, then you have the breakup you just mentioned. So then my question is that for the ones that don't allow it, is there something common that those 30 states have? What is the common denominator between those 30 states, would you say, if you happen to know?
Chair Haas, members of the committee, I'm not sure what the common denominator in terms of policy choice would be for the states that do not allow combined reporting. I can do more research into that if it would be helpful.
I was just curious.
California is a Finnegan state.
Mm-hmm. And then, I'm sorry, last follow-up. So then if we weren't to be Joyce or Finnegan, how do people capture these taxes in the states that don't allow either? What is it that they generally use?
So, Chair Haas, members of the committee, So states that allow neither would evaluate each corporation individually. So Corporation A would file completely separately in Oregon than Corporation B.
I have heard, we discussed this in the interim and previous mm-hmm. sessions, that moving to a Finnegan approach would be consistent with the single sales factor in the way Oregon has evolved for the last 20 years. Can you remind me why that is the case, if it is?
So, Chair Haas, members of the committee, I'm not sure off the top of my head why single sales factor would align better with Finnegan. I can do more research into that. My understanding of Finnegan is that we look at these groups of interrelated companies, and if one of them we are able to tax, then all of them were able to tax. And I think your question deals with something a little bit more technical than that I've presented today. I think it might have to deal with throwback rules, but I can look into that more.
Senator Boquist.
Thank you. Could we go back to the 20 states that Senator Taylor was asking questions about? You said they look at them individually, okay. How do they look at them individually? I mean, I get 20 states, so they all just look at every company and make some choice, or do they have a different tax model? There's some commonality between those 20. I mean, what is it those 20 do, or do they just do is one of them Ohio and has a commercial activities tax and doesn't even do this, or?
Chair Haas, members of the committee. I can do some more research about the 20. My understanding as of now is that the 20 that are neither Joyce nor Finnegan do not allow combined reporting. So if you think of an example in Oregon where a company is not part of a unitary group, they operate alone, then I believe the other states would evaluate those companies in the way that we would evaluate a company, like a standalone company within Oregon. But I'm not sure of the motivation behind that policy. So I'm not sure, like was mentioned earlier, of that common denominator for the 20, but I'm happy to do some more research into that.
Senator Taylor?
I certainly don't know the answer, but just in my, just looking this up here, the Tax Policy Center, for whatever it's worth in these documents here, listing all the states, I mean, there are a variety of factors that are taken into consideration, everything from the rate to the minimum, the formulas, right, the state payroll and property taxes, special formulas for manufacturing, throwbacks, as she mentioned, carry forwards, carry backs, combined reporting, Joyce or Finnegan, worldwide. There are a lot of factors taken into consideration.
Senator Booklis.
I guess it begs the question, because you might have got examples, but we're presently using the Joyce method. How many filers are there under the Joyce method in Oregon? Corporate filers, and do we have some not demographics, but some income rate brackets? I mean, are these, one would assume, and generally speaking, they're larger entities, like holding companies, but that may not be the case, because I believe last time around, we had lots of discussion about, you know, somebody's over in Vancouver, and they're doing office supplies in Vancouver, but they're making the office supplies in Wilsonville, and I actually had a baseball bat one, too, that was kind of going back and forth. So, I mean, who are these entities, and sort of what are their sizes, and...
So, Chair Haas, Senator Boquist, I don't have that information with me today, but I've made a note and I can find out some information on the income brackets of companies filing as unitary groups, and also if they're Oregon only, or if they are multi-state, and some more descriptive information about those.
Hello. And it might be useful to know if if we do a... If, is there any impact if we do a Joyce or Finnegan or third issue, just say third option, with at least the one, if not two, entities from 2012 that have tax stuff?
Guarantees?
I didn't say that. I didn't mention a name either. I'm trying to be polite early in the week. But I'm sure Chris can give you all the details about that.
Senator Taylor.
So when did we become a Joyce state? When did that happen? So I was just wondering, like, how we got here. You did a great, I think the example was really good. You did a really good job of explaining it. I was just curious about when we, what did we have before Joyce came along?
And that one got too complicated last time.
So, just Chair Haas,
selling with another.
I'll have that information with me, but I can absolutely get back to you on that.
No problem.
So if, you know, this is a bill, a committee bill, just to look at the advantages or disadvantages, if you were to make the case for making this switch, what would be the arguments in favor?
Chair Haas, members of the committee. So, again, this example that I've provided is very simplified. I believe some of the policy arguments in favor of, so you can make an argument in favor of Finnegan, by arguing that, for example, so Corporation A, let me see if I can advance from here.
You can.
Okay, so under the Joyce method, Corporation A, we're not currently in Oregon, in this example, we're not capturing the sales that were in Oregon from this method. Under the Finnegan method, in this example, those sales are recaptured. So you could make an argument that a company that's selling into Oregon tangible personal property, we might be missing those dollars under Joyce, and perhaps under Finnegan, we recapture those dollars. It's not as clear cut as that, like straight revenue gain, because of things like throwback rolls, and it gets more complicated with intangible sales. But if it would be helpful, I could prepare a more detailed presentation of this.
I think it would be, okay. But also, would you say that Finnegan for our state would give us a more accurate picture of taxpayer?
Chair Haas, members of the committee, I need to think a little bit more, I guess, about the distribution of taxpayers, like Senator Boquist mentioned earlier. I think in order to answer if we're accurately representing taxpayers. But as I mentioned in the last question, I think that if you were concerned, or someone was concerned about these $10 million in sales that were missing from Corporation A. We're not currently capturing those under Joyce, and so if that's viewed as an inaccuracy, potentially.
Okay, so, but yet there's a indeterminate revenue impact on this change because there are winners or losers or some, why is that?
Chair Haas, members of the committee, so this gets into, so yes, there are winners and losers. Winners and losers, and this has to deal with throwback sales. So in this very simple example with Finnegan, I've talked about, so now the $10 million in sales we include, if this example were more complicated, or for example, if that $10 million was being taxed somewhere else, then that would change how this mm-hmm. number is calculated. And so,
because they get a deduction there in this expense.
And so, when we talk about generating an overall aggregate revenue impact, I would need to know the distribution of the firms that, or the distribution of corporations in this case, that where they're selling to, how much throwback there is. And so, while this is one firm, when I aggregate this to the level of firms filing in Oregon, the distribution could change. But I can work on that analysis. I haven't done a formal revenue impact yet, but I believe in the past it's been indeterminate for those reasons.
Senator Riley.
So one of the things that I'm thinking about is the impact is different depending how on the other state, how they tax, is what you're telling us.
Senator Riley, Chair Haas, yes, that's correct.
So our, what happens with our taxation of these two companies depends on what state that company is in.
Yes. Chair Haas, Senator Riley, yes. And if the state is if the company is operating in multiple states, it becomes obviously even more complicated.
Yes.
We sometimes use the term nowhere sales. Mm-hmm. Does the Joyce method that we use result in nowhere sales?
Chair Haas, members of the committee. So nowhere sales would be, so for example, under Corporation A and the Joyce method, that $10 million could potentially be nowhere sales mm-hmm. If they're not taxed as a throwback in any case. And so it would depend on the state that that company is located in and whether we have a throwback agreement or whether that state participates in throwback agreement. But there's a potential, I believe, under this method for nowhere sales if there was no throwback in place.
Which method is easier to game, if you will?
Chair Haas, members of the committee. So I'm trying to answer this in a strictly nonpartisan way, and it's difficult to evaluate gains. But I would say that the question you asked earlier, so under the Joyce method, there are these sales where companies are selling into the state and not paying. And so to the extent that that's considered gaming, it's occurring under the Joyce system like we saw under Corporation A. But it's more... So in the broad scheme of things, it's a little bit more complicated due to the throwback sales and that distribution of data that I haven't looked at yet.
Senator Riley.
So clearly, to me at least, the Finnegan method, there can't be nowhere sales. In the Joyce method, there can be nowhere sales. Because in the Finnegan method, they're going to pay taxes here if they're not paying somewhere else. So they can't be a nowhere sale.
Chair Haas, Senator Riley, yes, that's my understanding. So,
okay.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chair Haas. So I know we've heard this before. I guess where I keep trying to understand is that it seems that there's this workaround or whatever, because you can always... a state can always resort to throwbacks and throw out rules to create policies, regardless if you go around Joyce or Finnegan. Is that, I mean, there's they're making some accommodations regardless of if you go with Joyce or Finnegan, isn't that correct? I mean, one has to take into consideration, and it's pretty hard for Oregon to take into consideration, try to navigate what the states that use Joyce or Finnegan, what their throwback and throwout rules are. We could be in here every 2 years trying to, it definitely seems that Joyce is not the right fit for Oregon. That definitely seems to be the case. I'm convinced of that. It's whether or not to go to Finnegan or to have neither. And then if we were to have neither, then what would we do and what would that, how would that impact us? And I don't know the answer to that. That's just an honest academic question.
One more question. So the company B that is in Oregon, does either method change the amount of their tax?
In this example, so Chair Haas, Senator Riley, in this example, I don't believe so, but in the broader distribution, I'm not sure currently. I'd have to do some more analysis because of those throwback rules. I don't believe so, but I don't want to give a 100% certain answer when I have.
I'd like that answer. Yeah.
Okay.
I have a question, Senator Riley.
Yes.
Explain your question.
So
I think I understand what you're saying.
So my question is, we have companies in Oregon that are selling things in other states, which is immaterial to my question.
Right.
What's material to my question is, if we do Joyce or if we do Finnegan, does either of those change the amount of taxes that a company pays, or do they pay the same, or do Oregon companies pay the same amount under either Joyce or Finnegan? And I believe the answer is they pay the same, but I wanted to clarify.
It is not the question where they pay the tax?
Okay, my question is really, do they pay the same to Oregon?
And see, because of the throwback rules and stuff, I'm wondering, do they pay the same tax? If you took this unitary group right here, and do they pay the same tax? Because the point is if they paid in another state, then you get these throwback rules going back and forth. If they get a deduction for what they paid in Nevada, we're back to the baseball bat. If you remember the baseball manufacturing company we had, we're making bats in Vancouver, is that, you know, the question is where you pay it. That's what I'm wondering, a continuation
that's
of your
part of the question. Yes,
yeah.
I agree.
I mean, I get exactly what you say is, do you pay here? But then the question is, that because you pay here because you paid it over there more or less? And I suppose this gets more complicated as what Senator Taylor raises, because you could be unitary group AB up there, and one of these could be in a Finnegan state, and one of these could be in a Joyce state, or one of them could be in a non-state, which is why you can't determine until you start seeing returns, which we can't see, which then comes back down is, how do we even know if we change this that they're, what they're telling us is true anyway, right? Because they're gonna have to file. You're not gonna be able to identify it. They're gonna have to file at their end, this unitary group, I guess AB company here. If we change it, they're gonna file, and then we're not really gonna know whether it's right or wrong.
Senator Ben.
Mr. Chair, I've made the mistake of trying to figure this out before this committee meeting, and I found this this great article that says the recent growth of mandatory unitary combined reporting. It's dated 2010, so it's not really that recent. But it goes through and compares four different states, and the variables are pretty amazing in each of those four states, and they go through and kind of compare the elements that we've been walking through here, and it's extremely obvious that to get to a point of understanding, we'd have to have this kind of analysis, because there's at least, I'm going to take a wild guess and say 10 different variables, and you can jump around, and you can see how each of these states has struggled to meet that, to anticipate what companies are going to do in response to what we do. So it's anyways, it's well worth the read, but I don't have anything to ask a question about because just it, there's nothing to stand on here, so.
Well, I seem to remember legislation maybe last session on this that one or two words did make the difference, and throwback was one of them that was huge. And so I think we do, well, I mean, we obviously need another layer with a little bit deeper analysis before we can pursue this, unless you guys are ready to vote now.
On what?
I don't think we're in, you didn't post for a work session, thank goodness, because we don't even have a clue what you're talking about.
I always like looking at the multi-state tax commission, but they have from 2018 a very detailed summary of 66 pages, but it's not single-spaced, but it really gives a lot of detail behind some of the pros and cons.
Joyce Finnegan.
And Joyce Finnegan. So.
How have we been doing this? I mean, I've been hearing about Joyce Finnegan since 2005, so we've been doing this quite a while, right? Was anybody around when we started doing this under Joyce? And
I don't know, I started the same time you did.
I know, so I mean, Dr. Warner's gone, so I mean, does somebody know?
I'm gonna Google up Joyce Finnegan and invite her to the next hearing.
It's two people.
St. Patrick's Day is coming up.
That's some tax right there.
We've agreed they're Irish, so let's just do it on St. Patrick's Day, right?
I would like to know, Chair Haas, how it is that we came, and she's sounds like she's going to look into it. I would like to know when we made this shift to become one or the other in what we had before, and if there's any way to go back to what was in place before, why we ever, maybe we should never have become one or the other.
Well, Legislative Revenue Officer Alan Ack, is that something you could answer? When we became Joyce, I went to that method.
Come on up. I mean, you're the leader now. You get paid the big bucks. I mean, somebody did the baseball bat analogy last time. I remember that one, so.
If he says 2005, you're going to be in trouble.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Chris Halanek, Legislative Revenue Office. I think it was decades ago.
See, we will. He knows how to save himself.
Detailed information and answer all of the questions that really get into the difficult choice. And as has been noted by the committee, all of the factors that play into the Joyce versus Finnegan. And it does only get more complicated with every parameter that comes into play, throw back, throw out, all of those rules. But the key concept that we were trying to get across is the notion of this unitary group and whether you go one by one within the group. So if you have a unitary group of, in Kate's example, two companies, you can have a unitary group of five companies, and whether nexus for one of them means nexus for all of them, or if you go one by one. And so that's where some potential gaming can be in terms of establishing nexus. I've spoken to a number of accountants that they can purposely establish nexus in a state if they want to. And when they establish nexus, and one of the reasons for doing that would be if a given company is in a loss position. So there are a lot of factors that come into deciding this, and that is a complicating factor in coming up with a revenue impact for the policy. But I think to the committee's point about going after this year after year, I think we can inch our way a little bit closer, kind of like we did with the cost of performance and the market-based. We eventually got to a point there.
Okay.
Could Senator Bence share his article with us later? Because I don't want to read the 60-some pages that Senator Taylor has.
For the executive summary.
I'll get copies for everybody. It's
okay. Thank you. We threw some pretty tough questions your way. You did a good job. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
So we'll revisit this another day. Those are the only two issues we have on our agenda. So that clears us out. Thank you all. We are adjourned.